Welcome to episode 67 of Published. Today we're back with another Q&A episode for you. Our in-house publishing consultant, David Endres, has compiled some of the most common distribution-related questions we get from authors, and he has returned to interview me. In this episode, we discuss the ins and outs of book distribution and help authors navigate the best ways to share their books with the world.
Welcome to Published, a podcast by Greenleaf Book Group, where we'll discuss the ins and outs of the publishing industry, from writing a book and finding the right publisher, to gearing up for a book launch. And now, here's your host, Greenleaf Book Group CEO, Tanya Hall.
Welcome back to Published. In this episode, you'll be hearing from me. If you're new to the podcast, I'm Tanya Hall, the CEO of Greenleaf Book Group. During my time at Greenleaf, I've worn many hats, from director of distribution to head of business development to COO and more. Today, I'll share my insights into the book distribution process as I work to answer your questions. You'll also hear from one of our in-house consultants, David Endres, who assists in the acquisition of new titles at Greenleaf and helps authors build successful book launch strategies. He'll chime in with his thoughts and tips as we go. And David and I both get lots of questions from authors about distribution, so we thought doing an updated distribution-focused podcast would be beneficial. In this episode, we'll discuss how to connect with wholesalers and distributors, what it takes to get a book into bookstores, how international distribution works, and more. If you've ever had questions about the distribution side of the book business, this is the episode for you. Let's get into the interview.
Tanya, welcome back to Published.
Well, thank you.
So today we're talking about distribution, and we're answering a lot of questions that we get about that. And I'm so glad we are, because distribution, obviously, is one of the most important parts of the book publishing process, but also one of the most misunderstood aspects of the industry. So to kick things off, could you just start by helping our listeners understand in a broad sense what the different distribution options are?
Sure. That's a great question. And I'll define them sort of in the terms that we divide them up by here at Greenleaf Book Group. So when we talk about quote unquote traditional distribution, we don't mean like traditional New York houses. We mean traditional distribution in the sense that we're pursuing brick and mortar. So that requires an offset print run, usually of a few thousand copies at least, and a certain timeline where we're pitching retailers 6 months before the book comes out, and books are traveling all across the country and making pit stops at wholesalers and getting sent out to distribution centers and then out into stores. That is a rather complicated, as you might imagine, logistics chain, and that part of the business can get very interesting and kind of cumbersome. So it takes a lot to understand and manage traditional distribution, but that's what we mean when we talk about it. And that's the bulk, really, of what we do here at Greenleaf. So then the people that we're selling to include, of course, the Barnes & Nobles and the airport accounts, the wholesalers, the libraries, our international partners, and many others that we've built relationships with over our 25 years. So that is what we'll call traditional distribution again. Then we have POD, or print on demand, which is just as it sounds. The book does not exist until it's demanded. So it lives digitally as a file sitting on a server, and then usually through an online strategy, somebody finds it, orders it. One copy of that book is produced and shipped directly to the consumer. So it, for the most part, doesn't hit bookstore shelves, although it is possible to have POD books stocked in bookstores if someone were to go to the front desk and request it, or if that manager wanted to bring it in and it's available in Ingram. So a lot of my answers here are going to be that it's gray, or there are exceptions, or it depends. And that's because there is sort of a lot of crossover sometimes with these different approaches. The third one I'll talk about that we will lump authors into, I guess, is an online only and wholesale availability account. I won't go too deep down this rabbit hole because it's complicated, but we have certain authors who really don't care to, let's say, abide by the buying timelines for, let's say, a Barnes & Noble, who wants to see things 6 months in advance, as we said earlier. And they're in a hurry to get their books out. They want it to be available online, but also be available through wholesale channels should someone care to order it through an indie bookstore. So in those cases, We're sort of bypassing our team of sales reps and just going ahead and making it available in those wholesale databases, but primarily focusing our energy on the online listings. So as you can see, we sort of pull from whichever distribution strategy we need to here at Greenleaf, at least, to suit the author's scenario and what they need as we assess their individual situations.
Yeah, got it. Thank you for that insight. I'll add to that too. One of the benefits that I've seen with authors with whom I've spoken going the online distribution route is having a hardcover.
Yes.
That they can then sell versus print on demand, which is primarily, if not always, a paperback.
That's a good point. Yes, that is very often why we end up going that route. Good point.
And I'm glad you mentioned wholesalers, because this is also another area that a lot of authors are confused about. For example, what the difference between a wholesaler and an actual distributor is. You know, a lot of the time authors will sometimes go directly to Ingram or Baker & Taylor, for example, to get their books distributed. And then they are surprised when they're told that they actually need a distributor first. So could you just speak a little bit about the difference there and what the process looks like?
Yes. So if we were to just draw a couple of lines in the sand between wholesalers and distributors, one would be a distributor usually has some exclusivity, right? The books that they distribute are exclusively theirs to distribute, versus a wholesaler has a warehouse full of a little bit of everything that they sell to their end retail users. So the distributor is for the most part selling to other wholesalers and retailers. The wholesaler, this gets really complicated. The wholesaler is probably selling to retailers as well. The other, before I talk about how this gets even grayer, the other line in the sand that I would say makes them different is that traditionally a distributor has a proactive sales force that is championing the books it represents. And that might mean they have people in-house that are calling upon what we call house accounts, or that might mean they have sales reps out in the field driving their Subarus from independent bookstore to independent bookstore and trying to get those books blanketed across the country. Probably it's some combination of those two things, but there are people who are working to get those books onto shelves. A wholesaler really makes books available. So they may have an online catalog that the book is a part of. And that's where I think authors get confused. Like, my book is available in Baker & Taylor. It's available in Ingram. Yeah, but there's nobody out there pitching it or championing it and trying to get it into the accounts. So where it gets even more confusing is when we start talking about Ingram, which is largely regarded, and I think their bigger capacity is as a wholesaler. However, they have a distribution arm. So it's possible that if you're working with Ingram Publishing Services, they are actually your distributor and they're also a wholesaler. So I would ask the question of, you know, do you have somebody, a real human being, not just a database, do you have somebody actively championing and pitching your books? If so, then that's probably a distributor.
Got it. And I've also heard from a lot of authors that they've seen advice online telling them that they need to buy their ISBNs early. Could you just help us all understand what an ISBN actually is and if authors do need indeed to buy one before finding a publisher or distributor?
Sure. So ISBN is International Standard Barcode Number. And just as that sounds, when you turn over the book and you've got the lower right-hand corner, typically you've got the barcode that's got the price and maybe even the subject listed beside it. That's the ISBN is a series of numbers sitting above that barcode. It is like the book's social security number. So every book, every format actually has its own ISBN. The ISBN is formatted in a way where the first part of the number is actually attributed to a given publisher. So for that reason, I would say if you have aspirations to be published by someone else, I would not procure an ISBN because your publisher is actually going to be providing one of their own so that the book is connected back to them in certain databases. If it's not the end of the world, if you do, it's just sort of a headache that in the design process, the publisher would have to drop the original ISBN and replace it with theirs. It's just an unnecessary step. But if you are committed to self-publishing and then finding a distributor to handle your self-published work, or at that point, we might say that you're indie published, it would make sense to have your own ISBN. So if you're going to be connecting the book to your own brand, your own imprint, then definitely you should have your own ISBN.
Understood. So Tanya, here's a question that we get a lot. I certainly hear all the time about the likelihood of getting a distributor to pick up their book for further distribution after it's been published elsewhere.
That's a tough one. And I, once again, it depends. And in this case, it depends most likely on how it performed in terms of the sales performance in the retail market. So we use a tool called Nielsen's BookScan, which same company that does SoundScan for the recording industry, and they do their TV ratings. They are our best barometer of sales, making it all the way to the end consumer. So if the book, when we look it up in that system, performed pretty well, even if it was just in certain markets, then a distributor might look at that and say, okay, it had a limited release because it didn't have a distributor. It performed well in the author's hometown. We think we can widen it. There's still some opportunity to be realized, right? So in that case, you might have a good shot, especially if you still have a lot of marketing lined up to support it. But if the book has kind of run its course and it didn't make much of an impact and has very little sales history, there's not much that a distributor can do with it at that point, especially given the timelines that distributors and publishers typically work on with retail partners. So bear in mind what we said earlier, where we are pitching our retail and wholesale partners even 6 months before a book comes out. So if the book's already been out, we're already behind that eight ball, right? We already have a disadvantage. The only reason it would become compelling at that point is, again, if we can point to some big surge in demand that's coming down the pipe for whatever reason that's well substantiated.
Yeah, makes sense. So here's another one. Are all publishers also distributors, and vice versa? Are all distributors also publishers?
No and no. Next question. No, just kidding. No. Are all publishers also distributors? Certainly not, because very often, in fact, publishers outsource distribution. It's quite difficult to build a distribution function within one's organization. Of course, we've done it here at Greenleaf. That's one of our big differentiators. For us, we were a distributor before we added on the publisher arm. So the reason it's difficult is that it's hard to open those new relationships. A lot of these retail and wholesale partners, they don't have the capacity to deal with any more partners. And so a lot of them just are hesitant to bring on, new partners. They'd rather route you to an existing distributor that they already work with. So some publishers, especially big publishers, do have distribution in-house, but most of them farm it out. So that's fine. It's more important above all that they do have that distribution, but it will have implications on things like your royalties. If there's a middleman, obviously, you'll have lower royalties. And then again, when you're working with a middleman, there's a little less control over what's happening with that third party sales team. So again, I'm a fan as long as there is a proactive sales force. And my pet peeve is people who call themselves full service publishers and they have zero distribution, like not even a partner distributor. So I feel like that's misleading. But to flip your question around, are all distributors publishers? No. Most of them represent multiple publishers. I would say very few of them actually have their own publishing arms. Again, we're weirdos that way. But I'm sure they're out there. Just I don't think there are very many of them. It's typically quite different business models.
Yeah. And on top of that, too, I would say, and you would know this better than I even, a lot of authors with whom I speak who want to use a publisher and then a different distributor, it can sometimes create a disjointed process, and one also where not every party might be as fully invested in the success of a given book if they're only contributing one piece of the pie to the process.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So here's another one that comes up a lot. Greenleaf has authors from all over the world, and sometimes I'm asked, do all distributors distribute books internationally? And also, what can an author do if the publisher doesn't distribute to the country or countries I'd like to be in?
I would say most legit distributors probably distribute internationally to a degree. I think, of course, there are, when we're talking about English language books, there are certain markets that make more sense than others. and where you're just going to see more concentration in terms of how the international distribution is handled. There are probably some distributors out there that don't do international distribution. It gets tricky because, again, we're talking about looping in a third party, and we've got to factor in the cost of shipping and freight. So the margins just start to get really squeezed when you're looking at international distribution. It can get complicated. If the distributor or publisher doesn't distribute to the country of your choice, I would say your choices at that point, as long as you're sure you have the legal clearing to do this or the go-ahead to do this, is you could just approach a distributor that you find in the country of your choice and see if they might take a one-off title. That's always an option. And some of them will, some won't. You probably have to do quite a bit of research. In general, distributors are wary of taking on an account that only brings them one title because there's a certain cost and investment they have to make into any given account. And obviously, if they're only selling one book out of that account, it gets harder to offset that investment, if that makes sense. So still, there are plenty of resources for someone to consider when they're pursuing those unique international distribution opportunities.
Yeah. So it goes without saying that a lot of authors who are looking for a distributor are really looking to increase their book sales, right? And one thing I get questions about all the time is how the sales cycle works when you're using a distributor, but also does that necessarily mean during the process that the bookstore buying the books from a publisher mean that those books are going to be sold? What does that look like?
Okay. So yeah, one thing I think authors don't realize on the front end is how long this timeline is and why they would be wise to honor it. And again, I think I've said it like three times now, but when we're pitching retailers and wholesalers, it's 6 months or longer, frankly. They often prefer even more lead time. But at the 6 month out point, 6 months from pub date, we need to go to them with a pretty clear picture of what this book is. They don't like to go down imagination road. So we need to show them a cover design. We need to have a really solid representation of the content itself. Marketing plans as buttoned up as we can get them that far in advance. And anything else that's persuasive and compelling to our pitch. And it's frustrating to authors because then we have that meeting and then there's radio silence for like 6 months before the book comes out. But those are their buying timelines. And when we're hitting them at that 6 month mark, they have the largest available budget to bring in product. So we always want to be pitching them when they have the most money in their wallet and they can then program or model in the widest distribution for the titles that we're pitching. The further we move away from that 6 month mark, and it does happen for various reasons, the budget that they have to work with for a given launch month has been allocated, obviously, to people who got there earlier, and we just start losing opportunities to widen distribution, if that makes sense. So do books get crashed and come out with, you know, 1 or 2 months notice? Yeah, you see it all the time when famous people die or there's some current event thing in the news. And yeah, everybody hustles to get a book out about whatever this unexpected thing that happened was. So of course it happens, and they have some surplus budget that's sitting there for things like that. But as a matter of course, they get real finicky when we don't stick to that 6 month timeline. So we tend to, you know, orient all of our processes around it. Forgive me, David. I forgot the second part of your question. It was a long one.
Yeah. Authors have asked, I know I asked a number in there. Does a bookstore buying books from a publisher mean that those books are sold?
Oh, nope. So there are two sales when we're talking about book selling. It's a curious industry because everything is sold returnable. 99.9% of things are sold returnable. There are always exceptions, but this is a practice that goes way back to the Depression, and it's just never been flipped. So unlike, let's say, if you're selling apparel into some retailer and they don't sell it, well, they would put it on sale, right, and eventually clearance and get rid of it, and it wouldn't come back to you. In the book selling industry, publisher sends 1,000 or however many copies out into Barnes and Noble, and that's the first sale. If the second sale of the consumer coming in and buying it off the shelf doesn't happen, then the books get returned to the publisher, and that undoes the sale for everybody. So when we talk about two sales, that's what we mean. And when we beat this drum constantly, like we do, about the need for the author to create demand, that's why. We can do our job and get, you know, tons of books out into the supply chain, but there's no reason to if the author isn't creating demand and they're all going to come right back. And worse, it starts to burn us and our reputation. It becomes the boy who cried wolf, right? We can go to our accounts and say, this is the next big thing and you should bring in tens of thousands. And then if they return 9,999, the next time we try to do that, they're going to look at us with one eye a little squinty and say, I don't know, last time it didn't really work out. So we're cautious in that way, as any good publisher would be. And always making sure that we're collaborating with our authors to button up that demand side of marketing their books and creating the pull that has to happen to make that second sale work.
Okay, so here's an important one, because this ties in very much with distribution, and that is the printing of books. So a lot of authors ask me, how do we figure out how many we need to print and what happens if we print those and they don't sell?
Yes, it's a good question, and it's such a moving target right now because there's a paper shortage in our industry, and we have to make this decision even earlier than we ever used to and with less information. So in terms of the first part of your question, how many do we print? Really, it's a two-part equation, with one part in our business model at least being, okay, author, how many are you going to move through your own platform and on your side outside of what we call the trade publishing world? So if they're a speaker or they're selling them on their website or the back of room, through workshops, whatever it may be, there's a certain quantity we're hoping that they can estimate they may need over, let's say, a year's time. And then on our side, we're going to look at the feedback and the purchase orders that we've received from our retail and wholesale partners and make an educated guess based on the quantities we see there and what we can anticipate for future demand, just based on being a distributor for 25 years and sort of there's always a bell curve, right? So we can look at something and anticipate based on those POs how it's going to perform over the coming months. Do we always get it exactly right? Of course not. Some books surprise us in either direction. Some outperform and some underperform. But we can make a pretty good guess of how many books we'll need to get us through a year is a reasonable time. I'm putting asterisks on that in my brain because of this paper shortage and the fact that we keep shortening that time frame because it's taking so long right now just to get books. So I think to be cautious, we might say, let's look at how many books you can move in 6 months, 9 months, just to be super cautious. I tend to advise authors, if they can, to err on the side of a smaller print run. And that way, as long as we have sufficient lead time to reprint, we have a little bit of flexibility should they get some major award or make a bestsellers list or some awesome review or endorsement comes in right after the book comes out. We can update it more easily than on that sooner, right, on that second printing. If we've got a warehouse of 15,000 units, which might have made sense at the time because the cost per unit comes down with higher quantities, we can't update it as soon as we could with the obviously smaller print runs. So there are trade-offs to be had. It's a conversation and, in our case, a collaborative decision that we arrive at with the author, and one that has some give and takes.
Brilliant. Yeah. Thank you for that insight. So Tanya, to wrap things up, what parting advice would you give authors hoping to increase book sales and are thinking of partnering with a distributor to do so?
Well, definitely, I would say be patient, do your homework and reference check, or don't just gut check, reference check and do your homework diligently on these distributors to find out what sort of success they've had. If you can talk to some of the publishers or authors that they represent, I think, of course, that's always helpful. There are some trade organizations that you could look at, like IBPA, the Independent Book Publishers Association. There are certainly many people within those circles who would be happy to weigh in. It's a relatively small industry in the sense that we all kind of know who each other are and have opinions. on our each other's work. So I'm sure folks will be happy to talk once you start asking, but do ask. And of course, like I said earlier, find out if they have a proactive sales force. It's a question that a lot of authors don't know to ask. And it's such an important one to avoid disappointment later. It can be hard to sort of unwind yourself from a relationship with the distributor. So you definitely just want to be diligent on the front end and choose the right partner for you.
Great. Thank you so much, Tanya.
You're welcome, David. Thank you. That's it for our episode today. We hope we were able to answer your questions about book distribution. For notes and resources from today's show, go to greenleafbookgroup.com/episode67. You can also find advice for writing, publishing, and promoting your work in my book, Ideas, Influence, and Income, which you can learn more about at ideasinfluenceandincome.com. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever it is you listen to your podcasts. It means a lot to have your feedback and helps us make sure we're answering your publishing questions. A big thank you to Eleanor Fishborn, who produces the published podcast, and we will be back next month with another new episode.
Thanks for listening to Published. To learn more, please visit greenleafbookgroup.com. And remember to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.